Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we'll focus more big picture on markets in terms of broad weakness that we are seeing this week and more, I guess, generally in the second quarter. We're only a couple weeks into the second quarter and the theme of rotation. We've chatted about the rotation of money quite a bit over the last 3 to 4 years. It seems like that money continuing to rotate into commodities. We're chatting with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Mike, like I said, we've seen a bit of weakness starting off Q4, especially in terms of the broad averages. What's your takeaway from this? Is this a natural correction? Is this something more to be concerned about?
Well, you know, I think this is kind of a continuation of that rotation that you're seeing out of the winners that we've had, right, for so long, the whole Mag 7 technology-only type environment, to something that's broader, to something that's more focused on, kind of almost has a little bit of a whiff of reflation in the air when you look at what's been doing well. And I think that that's a little bit of what's going on. Part of it, of course, also is geopolitics. I mean, you know, when you've got missiles flying in the Middle East, and people concerned about what, you know, Israel might do in response to that and so on. That's got people, I think, just taking risk off the table after a fantastic Q1. I mean, you look at what happened in the first quarter. Again, the S&P had its best run since 2019, best start to the year. You had, you know, multiple sectors and stocks that were up 10% plus in a pretty short period of time. So I think that, you know, what you're seeing now in Q2 is digestion, digestion with a little bit of a sprinkling of rotation on top. And some of the more cyclically oriented and cycle type, you know, oriented people that, or technically oriented, excuse me, people that I've spoken with that are in kind of our Money Show rotation and talked to in Miami last week, you know, really did say, you know, suggested April and May are probably going to be a little rough here. You're going through this period where it's better to wait it out versus get real aggressive. But in general, the consensus seemed to be, you know, it's nothing more than that sort of digestion, rotation, consolidation versus one of those, the primary trend is changing kind of environments.
Well, Mike, in addition to digestion and rotation and looking at things, you know, the consolidation of the markets, is it also a reality check that there's not going to be 7 rate cuts this year and that there may only be 1 or 2 or maybe none, that we may have a 0 rate cut environment this year? Is that weighing on the markets at all?
Yeah, I think you're right on target there. I mean, obviously, Jay Powell spoke this week and kind of confirmed the messaging that was being heard about from other Fed speakers that, look, you know, we may want to cut. We may think it's probably the right thing to do, but, you know, we're not seeing enough that gives us the ability to do so at this point. So we're just going to keep sitting on our hands. So, you know, obviously, we've talked about it before. I mean, the market was looking for 6, almost 7 rate cuts if you looked at the futures market pricing in at the start of the year. And that's basically depriced to 1 or, like you said, possibly 2. And the start of that process has been pushed out further in 24. So, you know, you roll that all in together. And I don't think, again, I don't personally think it has to be anything catastrophic. I don't think it has to be anything too worrisome. I think it's good if you see money rotate out of those old leaders and start to find new homes in a broader participatory type environment. But, you know, anytime you see that, if everybody's got to get out of, you know, and laying up on some of all these big mega positions in mega cap tech, that's going to take some steam out of the market. And that's what we're seeing.
So since we're talking rates then, Mike, how high can rates go in your eyes? We recently saw the 2-year pretty much touch 5%. We saw the 10-year just recently up at 4.7. Are we close to the peak in rates then market-wise, or do you think they still could go higher?
Look, I think a lot of it's going to have to depend on, you know, if we go from not just no rate cuts to whispers, you know, the H word again and hikes and so on. I just don't see that happening. I really don't think the Fed's going to switch from, you know, one end of the spectrum to the other. I was having a conversation earlier today here. And, you know, my point was, I think the hurdle for the Fed to start hiking again is much higher than the hurdle that for them to start cutting a little bit. I mean, in other words, you know, it would take some really bad news on the inflation and other fronts to get them to not just not cut, but start hiking. Whereas it could take only slightly better news on the inflation front for them to start at least cutting once or twice, in my opinion.
How much is the Japanese yen and what's going on in Japan, which with it's always been a carry trade, the yen, but the weak yen, how much is that causing them to sell U.S. treasuries? We've seen a number of articles about that. We've even had some friends of the show mention that what's going on in Japan is causing treasuries to be sold, which is what's driving the rates up.
It's so hard to know that sort of boogeyman trade, the yen carry trade. I mean, gosh, that's popped up. I mean, I've been in this business for a quarter century or so, and it's one of those things that just kind of pops up from time to time. Not very often, but it's one of those, oh, okay, how much of this is going on, and what does it mean for treasuries? What does it mean for risk, more broadly speaking, and so on. I don't think it's the big driver here. I think, again, it really just boils down to why would that be happening? Well, because their central bank is still being very unaggressive, whereas our central bank and other central banks have gotten very aggressive in the last few years. They've hardly played catch up at all. So that's, leads to big yield divergences and, money flowing from one currency to the other. I wouldn't freak out about it too much unless we really started to see this thing spiking. I think a lot more of what's going on is simply geopolitics sprinkled with on top of that rotation, sprinkled on top of the fact that you have big tech that a lot of fund managers are still have overweighted in, and they're now kind of eyeing the exits and looking to get out of that, or at least dial it back and look to get into newer things. And that's part of the reason why, on the flip side, if you're bullish commodities and you have been bullish metals and so on, you're loving this, because this is what I think we've talked about expecting for a while. And Godot finally showed up, and that's what's happening in that part of the market.
Yeah, it's almost right now like the perfect storm for some commodities, especially with the geopolitics. And also, look, central banks still looking to cut rates, but just pushing those back and further off later this year. What commodities are you focused on? And even driving further down, what about the equities underlying those commodities? Which ones in your eyes have still the best upside ahead of them?
Well, what happened on Friday is kind of interesting in gold. I think we might have hit a short-term exhaustion point where we had that, big rally on fears of what would happen the weekend, made a new intraday high, then kind of flopped into the close and pulled back a little bit, tried to bounce again. We're sort of just sitting around that 2400-ish level for gold. In the short term, that may just signify a little bit of exhaustion there. So, from a trading standpoint, if you are on a short-term time frame, you might expect some chops, some pullbacks, some consolidation in gold. But longer term, I still think the precious metals, I still think gold has an extremely powerful bull case for it. I would be surprised if this run doesn't at least get us to the high twos over the next few months in terms of gold pricing. Silver and copper, I mean, are interesting. You've seen obviously a pretty big breakout. Silver finally playing catch up, as well as copper being very strong. And I think that speaks to, again, a decent economic news going from bad to decent, or at least not getting worse in places like China and so on overseas. The growth outlook here in the U.S. picking up, as opposed to having a harder landing and so on. So I think that economically sensitive type parts of the metals market look good. And I was having a conversation with someone else, just highlighting, look, in copper too, you've got that sort of kicker of it being, involved in this energy transition, this, being a little bit sort of a stealth play on what's happening with renewables and energy transmission and so on, or transition. So that's kind of something that benefits copper versus, say, some of the other base metals. So I think that's probably where you've got or that's how I would break it down. Copper, silver is still promising. Gold maybe consolidates a little here in the very short term, but, on a longer term basis, I think it's headed to the high twos.
Mike, I appreciate you highlighting silver and copper because for a while, all we were hearing was that the only reason gold's going up is because of central bank buying. And that central bank buying was absolutely there underpinning it. But central banks don't buy copper. They don't buy silver. And they don't buy gold and silver or copper stocks. If you look at the copper stocks, man, those have really, the producers have really ripped higher. There's also now four copper ETFs where a year ago there was only one. So there seems to be a lot of bigger money starting to position in what you've been dubbing the reflation trade. So maybe just speak to how this all ties into maybe not having this big recession, the most advertised recession that never came, but maybe a reflation.
You just said something. I'm gonna steal that. Maybe the most advertising recession that never came. I like that slogan there. So good one with that. Again, it's you're seeing people. Really, the data show that look, the economy, it cooled, but it didn't collapse. It may be turning up again, not just here but overseas. All this stuff, this sort of doom and gloom that, and to be honest, accurate when it comes to things like Chinese real estate and ghost cities and so on. A lot of that was a concern for the base metals and other, stuff type parts of the commodities market. I think that as you move some of that off the front pages and as you kind of dial back the risk there, then that's going to bring in buyers, and that's what we're seeing. So And again, and J.C. Parrott's brought up a great point, a conversation I had with him this week. It's that when you have commodities bull markets, historically, they don't tend to last a year or two. They tend to last a decade or two. It tends to be something that, long-term issues with supply and demand come home to roost, and that doesn't just fix itself in 6 months or a year or whatever. So if that's the case, if this is sort of a new leg up, people throw around the word like commodity super cycle, and I'm not kind of that far on the bullish camp. But I do think that there is some truth to the underlying thesis, which is that if you get this move going, it'd be hard to imagine it's just going to stop after, 10% move or whatever it is, or 15%, depending on what kind of commodity you're talking about so far this year. So, I think that there's definitely more room to run.
What about some of these other commodity sectors, like the green narrative when it comes to energy? These ones had a bit more attention back when other commodities weren't running. Now it's more the old school commodities that are continuing to move higher, while some of these newer school commodities, or I guess green energy commodities, are lagging. Do you see those playing into this at all?
Yeah, I don't know if maybe you're referring to things like, lithium prices, how they had that big pop and then drop, and now we're kind of just sort of stagnating there, or some of those other type plays. Yeah, I mean, look, if you look at what's happened in the EV space, obviously, there was huge demand for a while for EVs, and a lot of activity done to sort of beef up the supply chains, gain access to some of the materials that go into that, and so on. And now what's happening with interest rates higher on car loans, and with people just saying, worried about whatever range ability to drive on some of these vehicles versus hybrids and so on. What are you seeing happening? You're seeing supply, dealer supply go up, dealer demand go down, and that's working its way through the kind of EV clean tech food chain. But in general, again, I don't think that it's a well, we can just throw that out. It's all going to, we're going to end up with a bunch of EVs parked at the junkyard. But it is something that the demand supply situation got out of whack, and so that's probably going to weigh on those markets for a little bit. But again, for every one example you could pick of that, there you could look at something like uranium, for example, which is sort of in the alternative energy space that's doing very well. Demand supply pricing is still pretty firm, so you got to kind of have to pick and choose your spots. But I think in general, the broad trend for commodities is up, and within that, there's parts of the market that are really, really enticing.
Yeah, Mike, and with all the EVs, there's all the electricity that's needed, the power grid upgrades and all the power generation. You can definitely lump copper in there. You could say silver is part of the solar movement, and definitely uranium's had a big move. But what about traditional energy, oil and nat gas? Nat gas can't get out of the slump it's in, but oil's had a pop recently and had a little pullback. But how much of that is geopolitical and how much of that is reflationary?
Again, it speaks to just like with gold, like we were talking about what happened, at the end of last week, gold had that big sort of tail end of the run that was obviously geopolitically driven, and worries about what the heck's going to happen over the weekend and so on. You get past the weekend and it pulls back when the attacks didn't really spiral out of control. I think you're seeing something similar when it comes to oil, where you had a premium built into the oil market a little bit on worries that something really bad might happen in the Middle East. If it doesn't, I mean, if it's just sort of bad and not really, really bad, then that premium comes out. But same thing. I mean, the move that we've had in oil, just like the move that we had in gold, I mean, these have been bull runs that have been going for, several months now. Gold obviously being very strong more recently. And that was when the geopolitical situation was kind of on the back burner. So that right there tells you, hey, that's not, there's cake here. If the geopolitics are sort of the icing on the cake that give you those extra couple of bucks or whatever, the cake itself is what's really driving the move underlying that. And I don't think, even if you get, of course, we all want peace. Even if you get a peace dividend or something breaking out, you lose a few bucks in oil, but then you find support based on the bigger picture supply demand environment.
Interesting, Mike. It just seems like, look, a much better environment for commodities. While a lot of other sectors had their run in the last couple of years, now it's commodities' turn as some of the other sectors fade away. Anything else on your radar here that is outside of commodities, outside of anything that we've chatted about that you've noticed a bit of life perking up in?
You kind of want to keep an eye on the crypto space there too. I think I look at crypto versus gold. It's not necessarily a versus kind of situation. It's they sort of are benefiting from the same trend, people looking for alternatives outside of traditional assets and so on and so forth. I look at it as gold being more of the tortoise and crypto being the hare, but the same, they're running the same race towards the same finish line where they both end up higher. I think that, it'll be interesting to see if that dynamic continues to play out. And I'd also say just you do have to watch the interest rate situation. If there's something that if I'm going to truly be proven wrong, and if something's really going to go sideways on my general bullish take, it's going to be if depricing Fed cuts turns into, oh crap, the Fed's really going to have to turn things up and hike, hike, hike. That's gonna, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't expect that to happen. If that were to happen, then that's going to derail the bullish thesis. But I don't, again, I think this. I tend to agree with the people I've spoken with that I trust and whose work I follow a lot. When they speak at our events, when they speak in just in person or whatever, that this is more just consolidation. It's what's to be expected after a big run. And the run, to be honest, wasn't just in the first quarter. It really started in November. So you had a couple extra months for a lot of different stocks and so on where that had started running. So, I mean, it was a good 5-6 month move that now we're in the period of digestion from.
Very good comments there, Mike. It's always great hearing kind of what sectors are on your radar all through those money shows as well, because you do have a lot of generalists that are following the trends and playing some of the swings as well. It means a lot hearing from you that you are hearing more interest in the commodity sector, and we can see that by price action. Mike, thank you very much for your time. Pleasure chatting with you. We'll chat again in another couple weeks.
You got it. Thanks so much, guys.